Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, a World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, broker here at Daniels Trading, which is a Stone X company. If you're a hedger, speculator, end user, farmer, broker-assisted online trading, we do it all. We also do consulting and OTC for the commodity markets. So if you have any questions about that, please feel free to contact me. My number is 312-706-7610. If you're a client and like what you hear and either you're in these positions or you want to get involved, let me know. If you're not a client and you'd be like to know what it'd be like working with us, whether it be on the consulting side, OTC, futures, and options, whether it be spec or hedge, end user or farmer, would love to talk to you. If you want to check out the newsletter, just go to turnerstake.com. And you can sign up for it there. If you like the podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. And if you think anyone would like to check out the podcast, please send it along. All right, so it is Wednesday, February 3rd. It's been a quiet week, I think, for the grain markets. Not so much for the stock market and some of the names that have been flying around, but definitely for the grain market, even though we've had some ups and downs. If you look at a daily chart, not a ton of movement. We'll get into that now. We got the WASDE coming up next week on Tuesday, so that's going to be interesting too. So, well, first we'll do a little bit on the macro side of the market. The stock market has been chugging along. I think there is expectations that we will see economic growth. COVID cases seem to be coming down. It seems like we're going to have more of the cities and states opening up. And we're now in the beginning of February. I would think you get to March and April and the weather starts turning. We'll have just more and more opening up of the economy, less restrictions. You would think that'd be good for economic growth. I think I tweeted it out, or no, I wrote my new newsletter. The Congressional Budget Office is looking for a very strong recovery for the economy this year. And we might get back to a GDP level that we haven't seen since pre-COVID, and the job market's expected to also rebound to the pre-COVID levels by 2022. So that's all very exciting. So it really does seem like things are on the up. You can see that with the stock market. You can see that the rotation and some more of the riskier assets, kind of a risk-on versus a risk-off mentality. Crude oil, for all of you out there that trade energies, or you know, your farmers or your business depends on energy prices. I do think crude oil is going higher. We are a couple of things. The economic growth is going. The administration is going to be a little bit more friendly to green energy, which means it'll probably be a little bit less friendly to fossil fuels. This is by no means when I get political. I know it can be a hot topic, but it just seems the way that they're going. And what that's going to mean is we'll probably have a little bit tighter supply because of those decisions in the short term. Doesn't mean we can't make up for it, one for one or more so in the long term on the renewable side. But in the short term, it is going to put a little bit of a crunch on the or just not rise production like you might want to see it. If there's no fracking or they get tough on fracking, if they're not going to allow for energy exploration or lease out for government land. So there's a couple of things that might not be as pro, let's call it like fossil fuel, conventional energy sources. And as there's the administration kind of promotes a switch to clean energy and renewable energy and green energy, whatever you want to call it, there's naturally going to be a gap there, right? So that's one thing that'd be bullish. So one, expected demand. Plus, not only is the economy growing, it's going to be more of that spring-summer economy where you would think you get more people out and about and driving. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the summer gasoline and crude oil markets. We'll also see what's happening with OPEC. And it sounds like OPEC just had a meeting today, and they're going to say their producers are going to maintain what the oil output is. Now, if you remember, a lot of the OPEC countries, OPEC Plus, it's OPEC and Russia, decided to keep, cut production a while ago, about a year ago, and they haven't increased those stocks. And they're not now. They're going to keep it. They're not going to increase output. So they're going to stay to this reduced output policy that they've been using. And that should continue to be bullish on crude oil. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do go up into the 60s here on crude, just on the fact that the economy's getting better. OPEC is not going to raise production right now. We should have economic growth and warmer weather coming, and it's going to be probably this new administration's energy policy to look more into green and renewables and not put as much focus on fracking and, government land for the fossil fuels, right? So you combine all those, you would think that energy would go up here in at least the short term, right? So I think that's where we're going on the macro side. Stock market, some people think the stock market's too high or it's too overvalued. That may be the case, but right now the money is flowing in, and it's flowing in because there is this expectation of growth around the corner. People are starting to get vaccines. I know in Illinois here, you got to be 65 and over, and if you're under 65, it's got to be either some kind of health at risk that you're getting it, or you're a first responder, doctor, nurse, that kind of thing. I'm going to assume cops and firemen, I would hope so anyways, and any kind of jobs that probably are government based or first responder based, medical field based, where you're going to just come in contact with a lot of people. So I think, there is this big story. We touched on it a little bit last week and in the newsletter, but there was the whole GameStop and individual stocks from Wall Street bets, and was it going to bleed into silver? It looks like the whole that GameStop was a real interesting opportunity where you had over 140% of that stock was short. That's I'm sure the SEC, you'd certainly hope so, would look into that. Usually stocks don't get that much of a short interest, and that really that alone explains, the short squeeze. There aren't that many companies that ever get over 100%. I actually can't remember anyone who ever got over 100% short, much less 50 or 60% short, unless they've already filed for bankruptcy and it's an arbitrage game. So I don't know. It's that will probably subside. It was a really interesting story. It'll be interesting to see what the aftermath of is that. I got some questions about it. Can something like that happen in the commodity and futures markets? You can get, if it was going to happen, it probably would have happened already with gold and silver. The gold and silver community of traders has been around for a long time. The broker that I started with, when I first started in this business, the broker that showed me the ropes, he was heavily into the metals. He called himself a gold bug. I've heard all the stories, and there's been a huge community of gold physical and paper futures traders for a long time in the metals markets. And the people on the other side of that trade have who are basically long the market, are big banks with big wallets, a lot more resources than a hedge fund would have. So I don't think it's gonna. I think silver's just gonna go up naturally. I don't think it can get have like a GameStop experience. I'm sure in the short term it can go up and down a couple of dollars here and there, but for it to go up to $50 again, it would need a real good reason to. Like we had with the subprime crisis, and then there's the massive amount of QE that came into the country. That could happen again. Maybe it's more of a slow rise. Just based on all the COVID relief we'll see and how long it'll take that economic recovery and what happens with the dollar. But it's an interesting story. I like the metals, but I don't think we're going to see some repeat of, GameStop and silver. It's not to say I don't like gold and silver. I do. I just don't think it's going to be how some people have been saying. And if you've been following that story, you know what I mean. If If you haven't been following the GameStop and AMC story, then I probably sound like I'm talking gibberish, but it's been in the news a lot lately. So that's, there you go. That's gold. That's energy. That's the stock market. Let's go on to the other side of this podcast and talk about the agriculture. We're going to have a exports report tomorrow that's probably a record large. I mean, China's bought what, 6 million metric tons of corn in the past week. That's just a massive amount. 6 million metric tons. You know, that's about what? Six times 30. I mean, that's over 200 million bushels that now the USDA has to say goes into the export column. We've got a WASDE report next week. I mean, are we at 1.3 or 1.2 billion on the ending stocks? You know what's interesting about the USDA is they are a government agency, and there are a lot of different groups within the USDA that make up these reports, like the NASS and the FSA, and there's the economics group and or the FAS, and you know, and the economics group, and they're everyone has different reports that get tabulated based on survey or estimates at different times a year, and it's all very highly scheduled, and that's why the January report is so big, and why the February or the December report can be a big snoozer, just because there's certain numbers in there that just don't get updated on certain months. The USDA sometimes will make a special occasion if something really significant's going on in the market. So usually I would say the February report is not a big deal. But does the February report update demand numbers for corn and maybe soybeans? I would think they'd feel some responsibility to update the export numbers for corn, but it doesn't mean they have to. It doesn't mean they can't punt to March because it is a government agency. When you and they do have a certain set way of doing things and who reports on what. So I wouldn't put it past the USDA to kind of take a pass on it. We've all seen it. If anyone who's been in the grain markets for, you know, at least a couple of years have seen reports where things have barely changed, even though everyone knows numbers changed even just a little bit on the export side or on the demand side anyways. So that'll be interesting. I do think ending stocks for corn get down to 1.2 or 1.3 now. We're going to need at least 92 million acres of corn next year. That's something else we can talk to about is the acreage. But it's going to be the export numbers are going to be big. We're expecting the USDA to start reflecting that in future WASDEs, and we're going to start talking about new crop corn soon and soybeans too. If an interesting story that came out is index funds have been lightening up considerably in their soybean position, but not the other major ag commodities. It's just been soybeans. I don't know why that's been doing. You can make the case it's been, you know, we've gone from 8 to 13 and it's time to get out. I get that. It's had quite the run. Also, when the soybeans get up to this level, you know, you've seen these air pockets. Like, if you take a, if anyone who's listening to this has thinks that, you know, soybeans have made some big moves over the past couple of weeks, the next last week or two, if you think there's been a big move in soybeans, old crop, in the past week or two, take a look at the daily chart. Put your hand or a piece of paper over the right side axis so you can't see the prices, you know, or wherever the prices are. Usually on they're up and down that right side. And then just take a look at the daily chart and ask yourself, have there been big moves in the past 2 weeks? The reason why I say that is if you just look at the daily chart and you don't look at the price range on the chart, you'd say to yourself, oh no, we've been pretty quiet. It's been consolidating and not much has been going on. But if you're living it and you're looking at the screen and you see the up 20, down 20, and it's, you know, down 30 or 40 over 2 days, and then we have the big rallies, it can feel like a big moving market. And in some ways it is, you know, in terms of money, you know, 1 cent in soybeans is, you know, $50 on a futures contract. And you know, there are farmers out there and they're seeing prices go 13.20, 13.60, 13.20. 40 cents is nothing to sneeze at. But when you think about it in terms of overall volatility, the overall total contract size of soybeans. I mean, soybeans at $13. Actually, let me ask you this. Those listening right now, if soybeans are at $13, what's the total contract value of one soybean? It is $65,000 of soybeans on a one lot. Now, margin might only be $3,000, but 5,000 times $13, that's 65,000 bucks. And just so we're clear here, 30 cents, soybeans at 13 and change, a 1% move is 13 cents. So a 2% move in soybeans is 26 cents. A 2% move 6 months ago was only about a 16 cent move, 17 cent move. Now it's 26, 27. And because the stocks are tighter, you'll see those more often and more quickly than you would when stocks were so abundant. So it's just the nature of this market. I mean, sometimes when I'm watching the screen during the day, it's like, whoa, we're really moving. And then I just got to take a step back and look at the daily chart and realize, we're really not moving that much right now. So the index funds have reduced their length. I don't know why. If they should choose to get back into this market, they're the ones who could probably bring this up the next leg. But it is they have been reducing, and they have and some of the other markets like corn, they haven't. So that'll be an interesting story to keep up touch with. What else is interesting is even though index funds have been coming out of soybeans, we're still in the 13s, right? So, at one hand, you're like, well, is that bearish if they're coming out? But if they're coming out and we're still above 13 and they've reduced their position by 50,000 contracts, the index funds, I mean, I think obviously there's value there. So where do we go from here? We've got the WASDE report. I don't feel that the markets are going to take off right now. I don't think we're going to break very hard. I don't think we're going to take off. I think the only thing that really send us higher is just a bullish surprise in the WASDE on Tuesday, which they could do that in corn. So I do like the weekly and maybe the February monthly options. They're going to be a little bit pricey just because of all the volatility and we're coming into that report. But I do like those calls heading into the report. And if I were going to do anything on the ahead of the WASDE, I would look into that. For farmers out there that have real risk to the downside because of their cash product, we can look into puts. I actually prefer to sell cash grain and then buy calls on the board. When we are have tight, I've been saying this a lot lately, but when you have tight stocks, when you're in a tight, you're a farmer and we're in a tight stock situation, what you want to do is be making cash sales and then finding a limited risk for your ownership on the board. The problem with the puts is they're expensive. Two, it's a bullish market and everyone wants to see the market go up. And three, you don't want to sell it because if you do sell it and you still have the cash grain and haven't sold it yet, but you're short on the board, it's a lot of margin you can, if we go up to six or 650, that's a lot of margin you got to deal with. So I've seen people try to do that, especially the last go around in 2011 to 13. It never, it's tough. That's a tough gig, tough way to do this. So I think when you have adequate, especially burdensome stocks out there, it does make sense to sell the board. You have a carry. You go out and you sell out in the back months and you let that carry work, for you. You buy a put out in the back months. Yeah, there's some time premium on it, but the carry's going in your favor also. So if you put spread it, it's actually a pretty good deal. If you're buying put spreads and selling call spreads in a carry market with so much time value left, like those are good strategies in that kind of a market. In this kind of a market, you're better off selling cash. And as far as the producer, the consumer, the end users that we work with, it's kind of a little bit of the opposite. You probably the some of the contracts at the end of this year and for next year are cheap compared to old crop. So you're almost better off buying futures. Like if you are an end user on the soybean, corn, wheat, meal, soybean oil side, in some of these markets that are severely inverted and new, as I like to say, new crop becomes old crop. I think it's the smart move here. I don't think this is going to be this. These high prices aren't going to cure themselves in the next couple months. It's going to take a cycle or two to really do that. So, if you are an end user and you need some I don't see enough strategies out of the end user community right now, or at least willing to do it. So, if you are interested in that, let me know. I am going to make some cash sale recommendations. I haven't in Turner's Take in a long time. I want to say we're only 20% sold old crop soybeans. Because as soon as we start, we got some targets hit like in the high nines, and then we kind of sat on our hands for a while. And then with corn, I'll have to double check too. We're probably just going to sell out of all the corn that we haven't sold. I haven't done any cash marketing in a while just because I've liked the market so much, but it's almost starting to seem kind of irresponsible. So we got to start booking some sales as for Turner's Take Ag Marketing. So we'll do that. And that'll be that. As far as the other markets, wheat, I still like Kansas City over Chicago. I think we're going from Kansas City being a higher stock to usage ratio than soft red winter wheat, which has been the case for years, which is why Kansas City has been trading below Chicago. That's going to switch. I really, between the basically Chicago wheat, the acres are expanding at a faster clip, but demand for hard red winter wheat is stronger. So you got the supply grown at a faster clip as a proportion on the Chicago side, and yet the demand is being stronger for the hard red winter wheat. The way I see it, the ending stocks are going to be tighter, starting with new crop for hard red wheat over soft red winter wheat. So I like Kansas City over Chicago. In years past, when they've been at around the same stock levels, stock to usage, or Kansas City's been tighter, I mean, the premium of Kansas City to Chicago has been anywhere between 20 cents or 60 cents. Right now, it's 10 under. So, I mean, I think it eventually get to back to where it was historically. So I still like that. I still like soybean oil. I think that's the best bullish story. Maybe corn's actually, I've been saying soybean oil has been the best bullish story here for months. And then China just came in and bought 6 to 8 million metric tons of corn. So I may have to rethink that, but it's up there. It is up there. It's really amazing what's happened with corn, and the demand that we've seen. Which brings us to the last thing I'm gonna just talk about real quick, and we'll get more into this as we go on through the year. But acres, new crop acres are gonna be a hot topic. The South American crop is pretty much made. We'll hear about yields. Actually, the beginning yields out of Mato Grosso is not great. They're okay, but they're not as good as I think farmers were hoping. And that could give soybean, but it's early, and it's just a couple of that we've heard about. But what's going to be interesting here is acres. How many acres are we going to plant? I think the total U.S. cropped acres, like total U.S. seeded areas, and not, I talk a lot about corn, wheat, and soybeans, but if you add in everything like sorghum and barley and oats and peanuts and sunflower and cotton, canola, rice, I'm sure I'm missing something. You add all that up, and we're usually around 300 million to 310 million acres with the feed grain, a little bit over 100, oil seeds in like the 80s and 90s. CRP is usually around 20 and 25 million. You get a total land area when you add it all up, in like the 330s or something like that. And it can vary. I mean, 2019, it was low. It got down to like three, like below 320. In years past, it's approached 340. So I think we're going to have a lot of acres. And the thing is, you look at, but, and we all talk about corn, soybeans, and wheat and how well priced they are. But some of these other markets that you look at, like sorghum, you take a look at sunflower, canola way up north, cotton. There's just some other markets here, and you're looking at the pricing and the profitability. It's good, right? I've had farmers tell me that they like Milo. So, it's not a slam dunk for corn, soybeans, or wheat to add on a lot of acres. I do think soybeans do get a lot. We lost a lot of soybean acres because of the tariffs, because of swine flu, because of the late planting that we have. And I, you know, to come back to 90 million acres of soybeans where prices are and rotations makes sense to me. I don't know how we get much higher than 92 million acres of corn. I've seen some estimates where it could be higher than that, but there's a lot of competition out there. And if soybeans are going to be closer to 90 and you do get some rotations going on, it's a hard number to get above 92. So if you know, if corn's 92 and soybeans are like 91, or if corn's 91 and soybeans are 91, we're going to be tight. We're going to be tight again next year. So what's going to be real interesting between now and the Ag Forum, and then we'll have planting intentions in the end of March, and then we'll have the first new crop WASDE estimates balance sheet in the May WASDE. It's going to be real interesting to see what the USDA and what farmers end up doing with acres, because acres does it used to be yield was you know trying to figuring out the yield was a much big variable in seeing where the production is going to be for a crop year. But the seed technology has gotten so good, and the farming practices and everything else, the yields seem to stabilize unless you get a real drought like 2012. But you know you can be like, okay, we're going to be with, I mean, you can almost say we're going to be within 5 bushels of, you know, corn from yield and maybe 2 on soybeans. I'm not saying there that isn't a big drastic, but it's not going to be, you know, 10%, you know, 10% away, right, from corn and soybeans. You can basically kind of pencil in we're going to be, once you know the acres, you know, 5% plus or minus either way, depending on how the year goes. So sometimes, so now it's a little changing a little bit where the acreage number, the big changes in acreage can have a just as big effect as yield, and that didn't used to be the case. So it's going to be a hot topic. The way I see it, we're going to be tight, and that's why I think this is a two crop cycle. But we'll start seeing those kind of reports also. So anyways, that's going to be Turner's take for today. Just want to end this with, I think the stock market will probably still be a favorite for money flow because of the expected economic growth. The same thesis is going to be why we probably see energies do well and commodities overall. Corn, soybeans, and wheat, we're all going to have elevated prices for at least for old crop and probably new crop too. I like Kansas City wheat over Chicago. I like corn and soybeans, but it will be big wide ranges, right? And we're just going to have to live with that and trade and hedge accordingly. And yeah, if you have any questions about what I do, whether it be in the futures and options market, consulting, or OTC, I'd love to know. If you're an existing client and want to talk about that, give me a call. My number is 312-706-7610. If you'd like to know what it'd be like to work with us, get in contact with me too. All my contact information is in the show notes. If you want to check out the newsletter, go to turnerstake.com. And if you like the podcast, please give us a review on iTunes. Hope everyone has a great rest of the week. We will be looking into short-term options heading into that WASDE report. And good luck on Tuesday. Talk to you all later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.